Hello again and welcome to Reset. 40 is the new happy. I'm Mike Morin and I search for people who love what they do after having done other things in their careers to get to that great gig. Alex Miniak has a job many people would pay to do. He's the public address announcer for a Major League Baseball team. Before winning the coveted job with the San Diego Padres in 2014, Alex was a radio broadcaster and manager and is still employed with Gigunda Group, a brand innovation engine that brings Alex to some pretty cool places, like the time you played Ron Burgundy Anchorman for a promotion on Good Morning America. So do you and Farrell still hang out now that you're both West Coast celebs?
Well, you know, he is very San Diego. We try to stay classy as much as possible together whenever we're in the same ballpark, which happened this year. But he didn't bring his suit and I brought mine, so what can you say? You know, I was holding up my end of the deal.
There you go. So even though you still work with Gigunda Group, your PA gig with the Padres is a dream come true, correct?
Absolutely. It's a chance to do what I love to do on the biggest stage, which is always an opportunity that I wanted for a very long time. You know, I thought it would come from a different line of work, which was my time in radio, but unfortunately it didn't work out, and I tried to parlay that into something else, try to use the skill and bring it to a different stage.
All right, so you did work radio for a lot of years. Actually, you and I worked down the hall from each other. You were the announcer for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats and other venues. So was Major League Sports public address announcing somewhere in the back of your mind on that bucket list of where you wanted to get to?
Not initially, no. I mean, in college, I studied TV and radio production. Really enjoyed radio and the camaraderie and the fun about it. And I did PA work in college kind of for beer money. And it was kind of an extra way to get some extra money to do odd events, like men's and women's tennis, and to get up early on a Sunday morning, get some free food and, you know, grab $50 and then, you know, have some spending cash, and then later in life, as things started to go on, I really kind of kicked myself for not taking that opportunity more seriously, especially I went to the University of Florida, which is a major Division I athletic program, not just in football and basketball, but, you know, gymnastics national champions, great volleyball program, women's soccer, now lacrosse. I mean, a lot of sports, a lot of entry points, which I should have taken advantage of at the time. But again, being a dumb college student, you don't really know. But it did hang with me, and it was kind of unfinished business, so to speak.
So talent, luck, and determination all play into reaching our goals. Talk about your years of PA work in New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, I had the opportunity to do some fill-in work at Southern New Hampshire University doing basketball. I kind of got into that towards the end of my radio career and made some connections and some inroads over there. Really enjoyed doing it. And then the on-field MC position opened with the Fisher Cats, and that's kind of how I got started over there. And I liked doing it, and then I kind of got rushed upstairs because of an emergency to finish out a game. And I found that I liked it a lot better up there. And I never went back down on the field. So, and that's where I sat for the better part of six seasons.
So then it was on to Major League Baseball. A few opportunities presented themselves. And I actually got to attend a game that you did at Fenway Park with the Toronto Blue Jays a couple of years ago. It was an audition. You didn't ultimately get the job. But what was it like looking out over 35,000 people you were announcing at Fenway Park?
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, one of the most critical parts of the game is pregame and all the pomp and circumstance and ceremonies. And if you can remember, we had that major rain delay, that downpour, which basically flooded all of left and center field. Because of that delay and because of, you know, being on a tight schedule to get that game in, when I started reading, nobody was in the stands because they were still drying them off. And then when I looked up, that's when the remaining 35,000 people showed up. So really, it didn't hit me until the greatest part of the amount of work I had that night was done. So, and to look up and go, oh, okay, this is for real now. That's like kind of when it hit me, was after the national anthem.
That was quite a storm that night. Barb and I were actually taking the Green Line in from Wellesley, and then we got shuffled onto a couple of buses because the power was out or a tree had fallen on the train track. So we didn't get there till the first inning. We missed, you know, the initial ceremonial stuff.
Yeah, well, a lot of people did with that rainstorm. That was intense, and people getting stuck out on 93 and on Starwood Drive. That went underwater. So, you know, all in good summer fun in Boston for sure.
So on your way to become the PA guy for the San Diego Padres, you've got 2 years under your belt. You did call a game at historic Wrigley Field. with nobody in the stands, a whole game. How weird was that?
A lot of echoes. You know, I always say that, you know, your midweek games or your ones with the least favorable or desirable matchups are always the toughest ones to work, right? You think they'd be easier, less people there, less pomp and circumstance, but you really react to the crowd, and the crowd then, you know, reacts to the action on the field. And so you get this give and take, and it's a lot easier to work. To work a complete empty stadium in March with no heat, staring at dead ivy with your career on the line and one shot take, yeah, it's a little intimidating. Yeah, but it was a blast. I tell people all the time and post that picture of my name on the famous Wrigley sign. So I get some mileage out of it.
So there was a lot of competition, certainly for the San Diego job. Social media played a part in it. So it must have been very nerve-wracking. In fact, I know it was because we had you on the air during that time. How did you find out that ultimately you were the guy?
Well, they had brought the three of us, the three finalists, into the room to each do three innings of the nine-inning game that night. And I went first, and so I went through my part, and then I got to the top of the fourth, and the next guy went, and then as they you know, got further into the game, the last guy went, and I got tapped on the shoulder. And what does that tap mean? Does that mean I'm done? Does that mean I get the gig? I don't know. They definitely held their cards close to their vest, and I didn't really have any indication whatsoever. I just had hope and faith. And so I was kind of I'm a pacer. I pace a lot when I talk. I pace a lot when I'm nervous. So I wore a small hole in the carpet back behind my eventual chair. But they had brought me into the team president's booth and sat me down. And there were a bunch of cameras around. And I said, well, this has kind of got to be good. They don't usually give cameras to people who didn't get the gig. And just kept hanging on every word until he finally said, welcome to San Diego. So that's how I found out. And then I had to go out and announce myself as the winner during the seventh inning stretch, which was, you know, okay, great. You know, like everything's still kind of meshing and coming to reality that this is going to be a huge life change. And so still one of the coolest moments. I saved that picture too. It's another one I keep around on my desktop. Just get that announcement and all those cameras in my face. And, you know, then now dealing with the press animal, you know, and everything that comes with it. So, but it was, would I do it all over again? Absolutely.
All right, so you have this job that you're not supposed to really call attention to yourself, yet how do you inject a little bit of your personality to put your stamp on your style in the game?
I think it comes down to presentation, you know, your enunciation, your the rhythm of your speech, you know, solemnness when you need it, happiness when you need it, you know, injecting that mood and feel into the overall environment of the ballpark. I mean, there'll be times where we need a very somber moment of silence, and I'm the only sound in that ballpark. And then there's other times where we're blasting t-shirt cannons, and I'm just trying to get people riled to stand up and get a free t-shirt we're giving away. So I think it is. It's having a voice and a brand, so to speak, that people are used to and comfortable with when they come to the ballpark. They know what they're going to get and understand the fabric of the game presentation, but then also reacting to mood and big moments and creating moments for people to you know, form a memory to take home with them as well.
A couple of highlights. You've done well over 100 games now, what, 150, 200, not quite 200 yet. A couple highlights. I saw a picture with you and Dick Enberg, a great broadcasting icon. There must be other moments that you recall along those lines.
Yeah, he's a rival broadcaster, of course, but Vin Scully, you know, Vin came into my booth last year, and I don't have a booth anymore, by the way. We've blown it out into one big room, so I sit front and center now. But when I had a room, Vin came in, and he asked if he could use the room to make a phone call, and I, you know, definitely obliged and said, you know, room's all yours, Vin. Really nice guy. Dick is a very nice and very knowledgeable man himself. We've, you know, in the NL West, we've had a chance to have some very legendary broadcasters and also some other great broadcasters that are now coming our way in Don Orsillo. So I look forward to working with him as well and getting to know him. He'll be my neighbor a couple doors down.
That's very cool. I totally forgot about that as I thought about the interview. Don Orsillo, boy, I tell you, the Red Sox management, with the way the team has played and with that move, not very popular these days.
Yeah, I can't really comment on the decisions that are made here in Boston. I mean, I wish things for myself might have played out differently at the time, but you know, everything happens for a reason. And I, you know, I certainly believe in the leadership and the things we're doing in San Diego. And I know we're building a winner, and I know that we're building a heck of a game presentation and a heck of a broadcasting team. So I couldn't be happier. I'd rather definitely be on the upswing than having to abide by a preformed tradition. I'd rather be a part of making something special as opposed to, you know, trying to fit into the fabric or be shoehorned into something that's already special.
You got a dream job. It's not a full-time job as far as finances and benefits, but how can you build this now into some collateral income or exposure for yourself?
Well, I'm fortunate in that Petco Park is a year-round facility, and we do a lot of events in the off-season, too, whether it be corporate events, whether it be a basketball game that we're doing at home plates coming up in a few days. We do a sled hill in center field during the late part of December called Holiday Wonderland. So we do a lot of different events that keep me busy and keep a PA guy around to make sure that everybody is welcome to the ballpark, and some crucial safety announcements and things are checked, and you know, read sponsors and introduce key people and individuals and stuff, press events, yeah, anything like that, banquets, awards, those kind of things. So while it's not as intense as a regular season, there's definitely a lot to do, for sure. We try to keep it a year-round facility there.
And finally, you got to this job after two other failed attempts in Boston and Chicago. You seem to love it. What advice would you give to people who are still trying to get to that dream job as you have?
Well, there's always going to be more than one opportunity, I think. And, you know, whether you believe it at the time or not, maybe it's not the right opportunity. You can't be the perfect piece for all situations. And what I learned in, you know, doing the audition in Chicago and the one in Boston is that they might be looking for somebody else, and I'm not going to be particularly what they're looking for. And I'm not going to try to be that person. Try to be yourself and create your own persona, your own brand, hone your own skill set and something that makes you as an individual special. And that opportunity will present itself eventually, and it will work out. So, perseverance pays. I mean, don't give up. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but it's true.
I never knew you to be so philosophical.
I've done a lot of thinking in my time. those plane rides were long there for the beginning of this trip until I finally moved. So, yeah, no, it's true, though. I really believe that.
Alex Miniak, so good to talk to you. Continued success in season 3.
Absolutely. And 4, 5, 6, and 7. And we got an All-Star game this year, and hopefully a World Series. We'll wait and see.